Man, number 8. Science and Health, chapter 2, Atonement and Eucharist. The three introductory quotes to Science and Health are as follows. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That is a statement by Jesus, who was recorded by John, chapter 8. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy. The first two verses set the stage. We have to be anchored in truth. We have to realize that what we think about something is what we experience. And number 3, we will have the blessing. If we follow the first two steps, anchor ourselves in truth and only think, we could really add say and do. So let's say if we only think, say, and do, what are godlike thoughts? In proportion as we do that, we will experience blessings. We must remember the sequence is very important. As Solomon instructs, we seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then these things will be added unto us. As has been recommended in prior treatments, it can be very useful to read the summary or the theme of the chapter as written by John Morgan. For chapter 2, Atonement and Eucharist, he states, the word atonement, as used in theology, means unity, reconciliation, and its derivation is literally at one. At one month, therefore, is not just a play on words. Some dictionaries even include Mary Baker Eddy's words, quote, atonement is the exemplification of man's unity with God, whereby man reflects divine truth, life, and love. SNH 18. But the chapter is called Atonement and Eucharist, and in this context, Eucharist focuses on the price we are required to pay to experience atonement. This price is that we have to give up all personal sense of a separate self. Jesus' sinless life depicts the surrender of the mortal sense of a life of one's own. He had no sense of himself as a separate person called Jesus. His divine identity as the Christ was his whole being. It demonstrated man reunited with or reconciled to God. That is from Dissolving Barriers by John L. Morgan. Another thing, in order to get oriented to what this is all about, is to read the introductory quotes to the chapter. For chapter 2, Atonement and Eucharist, they are as follows. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. That's from Paul. The next one also from Paul. For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel. And the final one from Jesus. For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come. The key points appear to be that number 1, We have to align thought with the truth. And if we do that in all thought, speech, and action, we will experience the blessings. As Solomon reminds us, to seek God first, and then the blessings come. Summary of the chapter by John L. Morgan indicates that the goal of this chapter is to realize the importance of being at one with the Christ in consciousness. And in order to do that, the price we have to pay is to give up the sense of self, ego, a belief of life, truth, and intelligence in us as a person. And that is further supported by the introductory quotes to the chapter and by Paul, who basically says the same thing, and that is that we have to crucify the flesh. In other words, step away from it. Get our thought lifted above. And Jesus closes it out by saying that he could not drink of any vine until he has recognized and gotten his consciousness into the kingdom of God. One thing that I've not done in the past, and that is to read the diapason quotations from Mary Baker Eddy for the synonymous term of spirit, because it appears that chapter 2 is in alignment with the synonymous term for spirit. We're giving up the matter and we're going to the spiritual atmosphere, giving up body and as a flesh and going to the mental atmosphere, which is spirit. Diapason of heaven for spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. That is from the 1881 to 1898 Mary Baker Eddy class notes, where she was teaching in the Metaphysical College in Boston. And this is from volume 1, page 75, and that is available. And if you send us a message through our message system with your phone number, we will call you and give you the details. It is very useful to be totally aware all the time of what Mary Baker Eddy states at the bottom of page 146. This, by the way, is at the top of every page of our website in the section that they call the header, because it is so important. It's really the total focus of Christian Science. And the system of divine metaphysics, which is the name that she terms for the system, states the following. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for the present application to the cure of disease. Now keep in mind, disease means anything that is a dis-ease. It's anything that is discordant. anything that is not harmonious or balanced or perfect, anything at all that is ungodlike, realizing that we cannot mix anything that is on the other side of the line. What I mean by that is exactly what it states in the second day of creation, in the history of creation, which is in Genesis chapter 1. And the second day is when there is a firmament that divides everything. And that is the line I'm talking about. There is no dilution in anything that is godlike. You can't have mostly love and then a little bit of hate, or mostly intelligence and a little bit of ignorance. And this applies to every word that describes God. It is all or nothing. There's no such thing as 99.99% pure. Spirit is flawless, 100% pure. No alloy, no mixture, no dilution. We need to be thinking about the scientific statement of being. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. None. Not a decimal. Absolutely flawless is what we need to be thinking about. And if we're not, then it's going to fail. Our efforts will fail if we try to mix anything with God that is ungodlike. And we also must remember what Jesus said, and that was that if you are thinking it, it is the same as doing it. Obviously, everyone has skeletons in their closet. Otherwise, we would have ascended. And I don't mean to pass on and be cremated. I'm talking about the consciousness must be ascended above any belief in life, truth, or intelligence in anything except God. How does this fit into the system? The system of divine metaphysics. Think about math. Math has 10 digits, 0 to 9. It has four operators: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. I'm just referring to the basics. Obviously not calculus, because those are just advanced views of the basics. An exponential power in mathematics is multiplying. A root is dividing. In mathematics, one must do things in a particular sequence. They must do their adding and subtracting to come up with a result before they can apply it to multiplying and dividing. So the sequence is mandatory. The same thing in the system of divine metaphysics. We have to have an appreciation for what the elements are, which are the seven synonymous terms for God, before we can apply the operators, because the operators are the functions which are applied to the objects, and the seven synonymous terms are the objects. The operators in divine metaphysics are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word are the facts about God. The Christ is being able to translate or interpret whatever comes our way by utilizing the facts about God. Christianity is proving one and two together. It's proving that we have an appreciation for what the facts about God are, and we can translate and interpret what is in front of us that appears to be a problem. And Christianity is demonstrating or proving what we understand to be correct about God and interpretation and translation, such that healing results. Mr. Rawson was a genius, one of the best practitioners of all time, and researchers and writers. And he said, if you have an idea about how to solve a problem, test it. And he did this with Christian Science. He was able to discover how to move back in time in the demonstration. In other words, he called it treating backwards or retroactive treatment. In other words, the result of his work would be effective at a time prior to him being contacted, in which there was a request for him to be involved in treatment. We have all this on our website. Just go to the Rawson Index page under authors, and you can read all about it. So, if we think we know something about how to solve the problem, we should test it and see if it works. We have to remember, we have to keep a perfect motto in thought at all times, because we're dealing with consciousness, our own consciousness. We are not dealing with the consciousness of someone else, because we have to have our own consciousness clear as the first step. And then we have to think about any patient that we may be trying to help in an impersonal way. In other words, we need to be referring to them as man, not as John Carpenter or whatever his name is. Now remember that adults cannot teach adults. They can offer information, and adults have to learn on their own initiative. So, what should we be learning from Chapter 2 that Mary Baker Eddy provides to us as valuable information? Well, the title gives us a big clue, and that is that we have to be at one. Not with Jesus, not with a man, but with God, or the Christ consciousness. Jesus earned the title of the Christ, just like someone who gets a degree in PhD is called doctor, or someone that has another title, such as president, president such and such, or governor such and such. And of course, the real president and the real governor and the real doctor is God. I've never called God doctor, but Dr. God. Yeah, well, we could call him anything we want as long as it is with reverence and clearly states the flawless nature of his character or of its character. Because God is not just female or male, but God is everything. God is all there is. There is nothing but God. So anything that is of reverence, good, is of reverence. Mary Baker Eddy says God is good, and she capitalizes the word God when she wants it to mean and to refer to the one and only God. And that's the reason why she capitalizes in her new language that she developed, which is capitalization, why she capitalizes mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love when she means God. So we have to take special note in the textbook when those words are capitalized, being alert that she may be referring to God, and probably is. It could also be the title of a book or something. and titles typically have words capitalized, but they don't necessarily mean God. So how can we use the idea of what man should be in relating to chapter 2? Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention is that the redwood sequoia trees have a root system that is shallow, but they bond together. And as a result of the strength that they get from each other, from the grand network of all the roots, they are apparently the longest lasting, the strongest and the tallest trees, and the oldest, well, I guess that's long lasting, of all the trees on planet Earth. That's why when a so-called evil is trying to attack, that the first thing it does is try to separate. Evil political motivations try to separate. They try to determine and publicize a law which says you cannot unite with other people. You have to be isolated in your house. This was a trick they used for the so-called fraudulent pandemic. You could not gather in groups more than, a few people. You couldn't go to church. You had to be in your house. So the first thing they want to do is to break up any unity. They want to break up the family. They don't want marriages. They certainly don't want morality. So those different, and by they I mean those forms of evil, and we must not be thinking about individuals because that really has no benefit. Because evil is impersonal. It is not a personality. One of the quotes in the Bible is, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." Anyone performing evil acts is mesmerized. They're hypnotized. They've forgotten about their connection to God. Or maybe they never knew it existed. So we can't be looking at a personality. We have to be realizing that they don't know what they're doing. Certainly, I've done many things in my life that I didn't know what I was doing. Obviously, that was discovered later. I would have liked to have discovered it in advance of making the mistake. Mary Baker Eddy talks about humans that go through stages, and at 20, they have certain ideas, and 30, and 40, and 50. And then when she gets around about 60 or 70, she says they realize what mistakes they made when they were younger. And they're finally starting to get some sense and to do things more productively. Dale Carnegie, one of the most famous individual trainers on success, says you better not criticize other people today because tomorrow you may be enlightened and agree with them. He had a very high opinion of Mary Baker Eddy, and he stated such in one or more of his books that I read. I remember reading it. So we want to think about the network, like the roots of the redwood sequoia trees. What does that mean? Well, mind, as Mary Baker Eddy defines it in Glossary, she says that good, G-O-O-D, is God, Spirit. And then she gives us the four omnis: omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omni-action. Now, we all think of what omnipotence is, but how does omnipotence come about? Omnipotence comes about by creative ability, capacity, capability, functionality, and that being combined with action, which gives us performance. Performance is then measured as power. So if you buy a car and it says it's so many horsepower, it means that it has been tested so that it could be capable and function and have action and all these things combined to deliver a performance. And that performance is then measured on a dynamometer as horsepower. Since God is all power, that means omnipotent, that means one only and all, because that's what omni means, then there is no other power that exists from any source. There's no other capability, there's no other capacity, there's no other functionality, there's no other creative ability, there's no other performance, because all those are ingredients that make up power. And if God is the only power, that means all of these features that were just mentioned, and so many more that were not mentioned, all come from one source. So if that is the case, when we think about spirit, we have to be thinking about its opposite, which is matter. And we say, well, where does the power of matter come from? And is it permanent? Is it going to be there tomorrow? Was it here yesterday? Well, the answer to both of those is no. Because matter is only a thought. It is not a fact. It's not a fact about God. It is only thought about what we think it is. And as Mary Baker Eddy says, the human history is lie compounded upon lie. The spiritual history has always been true and is eternal. It lasts forever. So, omniscience is intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. If spirit is the only substance, do we need to know that? You bet. And if we need to know anything, that means we have to utilize the feature of mind, which is part of omniscience, which is knowing. How about if we need to do something? Should we do it with ignorance or with intelligence? Should we make a wise action or a stupid action? Should we know what we're doing? Bicknell Young was considered by many as the dean of Christian Science healing. Now, I think that's just something that a few of people thought of and passed it around, because no one is the dean. Everyone is in a learning process. But he said something very important when he was teaching the normal class, which means teaching other Christian Scientists, so that when they graduated from that class, they would be a teacher to other students. But in his 1937 class, he said one of the biggest problems that he found with people that were in business that came to him for help, in other words, healing, they didn't know their business. They expected miracles to happen. I guess it would be like the genie in the bottle. Abracadabra. And then expect some miracle to happen. He said, you have to know what you're doing. Well, that's a quality of mind, just knowing. That's part of omniscience, which is mind. We have to develop our understanding of the business that we are in to the absolute highest level through study and practice of all the principles of the business that we are in. If we're manufacturing computers, we better know something about every little thing that is involved in the manufacturing of computers. And we better have people working for us that are doing those different tasks, which are a part of the overall project, that know what they're doing in their individual element that they are providing to the whole. Henry Ford, the one that made mass production of automobiles popular, had electrical switches on his desk, and they were connected that rang some kind of an alarm into the office of the man that was responsible for that particular part of the manufacturing. So if he had a question about something, or if he wanted to find out how things were going, he would press the button, and the guy would come into his desk, into his office, and he could ask him whatever he needed to ask. You know, how many sales did we have, or whatever the guy's responsibility was. You know, how many tires did we use? Or he might say, I have an idea about a new feature that we should put on the car. What do you think about it? I mean, the point is that he had a system and a structure to communicate with his key people. That's what the system of Christian Science, the system of divine metaphysics, is all about. If we have a problem with intelligence, we need to know that we look to mind, not the mind of man, not the brain of something on top of someone's head, but supposedly, not a computer, but we look to the one and only source of intelligence. Not artificial intelligence, but the real thing. If we are thinking about life, which is really living the qualities of God, are we doing it in an intelligent way? Are we living our life in an intelligent way? How about love? Love is the plan and design of everything. Are we utilizing love when we deal with our staff that work for us, or our family, our wife or husband or children, or our parents, or, you know, whoever? Are we dealing with them in the atmosphere of love? See, that's the network. That is the system. We have to be thinking about all of the primary qualities of God, all seven of them, all the time, because they mix with each other. In other words, they blend with each other. They complement each other. And they are required to be a part of every single thought, speech, and action. Are we intelligent in the way we're loving? Do we just let a young child go after a ball that went out in the middle of the street and feel that we're giving them freedom? That's stupidity. It's not mind. It's not intelligence. That's not wisdom. That's not knowing that there's danger. How about principle? Like Bicknell Young was talking about, do we know the principle of the business that we're in? Do we know the principle of every different phase? Like getting the materials, assembling it, testing it. Do we know how to sell it? Do we know how to market it? Doesn't do any good to manufacture a product if we don't know how to market it. Do we realize the value of customer satisfaction? My dad was in business his entire life, and he said the best advertising in the world is a satisfied customer. Do we want a satisfied customer coming out of any contact they have with our customer service department? That's love combining with principle, combining with mind. We got to be thinking about it. We got to make sure that there are checks and balances, which is principle. We got to make sure every customer is satisfied. Bernie Kerik was the police commissioner of New York City. And when Rudy Giuliani took over as mayor, he hired Bernie for his police commissioner, and they inherited the most corrupt city in the U.S. And when they left, they had the cleanest, most uncorrupt, probably not a word, but the most uncorrupt city. How did they do it? Well, Bernie Kerik wrote a book about it. He says, if there's no accountability, it doesn't get done. So he set up a system and he mandated it to the people directly under him. They mandated it unto their subordinates and so forth. So there was checks and balances on everything. There was a system and a structure to make sure certain procedures were followed, and it was all monitored to make sure that there was consistent progress. And if there needed to be adjustments, then they made adjustments in the plan or the structure or the system. Or they might have had to change people. Probably did. They probably had to clean out some people that just didn't want to change. We have to be willing, like John Morgan says, to make changes. Like he says for the chapter 2, Atonement and Eucharist. Eucharist is the price we pay to get the atonement. We have to give up the sense of ego. We have to give up the sense of personality. And we got to look to the God qualities and develop a spiritual individuality. Not a personality that is full of emotions, that goes ups and downs, you know, dances around with mortal mind. No, that doesn't get anywhere. We've got to think about the network. All the time we got to think about, okay, what do I need to be utilizing here? Is it intelligence I'm missing? Or is it love? Or is it principle? Is there balance in what I'm doing? Do I work 23 hours a day and I have a family with children? That doesn't sound like balance to me. Do I need to be driving a car 20 or 30 miles per hour over the speed limit because I have to get to a meeting? Is that according to principle? Are we letting the fact that we were unorganized in our activities and didn't prepare so that we could travel at a normal, safe speed to go to the meeting, to get there? What kind of sense are we using, which is soul, when we conduct our life in that manner? I don't believe it's spiritual sense. I believe it's emotion. I believe it's lack of planning, lack of intelligence, lack of principle, lack of truth. Truth is a path that does not change. It is fixed. The truth never changes. One may need to study about time management. That's certainly a part of one's life. Do you know how to manage your time properly? Now you can ask divine mind for guidance on what to do. You know, what should I study? What kind of references should I be utilizing? What should I glean from this book or this recording? But if you're not going to learn the principle of time management, don't expect to be a whiz at utilizing your time properly. Mary Baker Eddy said, we all can do more than what we do. And she said one of the most important reasons for failure is we don't use the moments. A moment is a word that defines the smallest measurement of time. Now remember, the smallest cannot be utilized by mathematics, because mathematics has the function called division. So we can always divide the number to a smaller number. We can always add more zeros after the period before the first digit appears to the right side of the decimal period. So math can always be divided to something smaller, but the word moment cannot be divided, because that is defined as being the smallest measurement of time. And infinite is the largest measurement of everything. Whether it's, it doesn't matter what the topic is, if we say infinite, it means it has no limit. So moment and infinite are two very important words to utilize in our life. Mary Baker Eddy must have been really structured in a very, very professional way. Now, I'm sure that divine guidance had a very direct influence on exactly how she divided up her time. And if we are at that, and if we are at that stage, then fine. But believe me, I'm sure that she knew the principles of time management. How about our body? What is our body? I was enlightened when a long-time practitioner and friend told me what my body was. What is our body? Our body is everything in our consciousness, everything in our thought. It's what we are thinking, saying, and doing. It's who we are thinking, or who we are thinking about, or talking about, or doing something with. It is our business. It is our family. It is every event we're involved in. Everything we think about is then manifested as something that we are going to talk about or something we're going to do. Or maybe we don't even talk about it, but we're going to do it. Even if we're doing it in thought, we're doing it. So our body is only a word that describes the containment of everything about us. Everything. Nothing is left out of our body. Forget the physical thing that somebody can touch, or we can touch, or see in the mirror, or whatever. That is only a mirage. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in a material, physical, anything. When they were doing research on splitting the atom, they kept splitting it into smaller and smaller and smaller parts. Remember what I said about mathematics? If you use mathematics, there is no minimum, because you just take it out another decimal, another zero, put another zero there. It can always be multiplied, it can always be divided. Mathematics has no limit. It has a symbol for infinity, which is a figure eight on its side. And what that means is that there is no solution. If you multiply certain numbers or divide certain numbers, the same digit repeats ad infinitum. In other words, there's no limit to it. It never resolves into a different number. 2 divided by 3 is an example. It is 6666 forever. One of the first thoughts that should occur to us if we see a belief of an accident is There is no separation. Because it is a belief that there's a separation between God and God's manifestation, which is man. God could not have an accident. God could never be discordant, because God is defined as divine principle. There's no discord in principle. How about hate? Hate is a belief of separation, because there's no hate in love. God is love. Two separate minds is the belief of separation. A mortal mind, supposedly, and an immortal mind, which is the only real mind. As Mary Baker Eddy states, mortal mind is an oxymoron because mind is not mortal. It is immortal. So there is no such thing as two opposites. I've given the example before about black and white. There is no such thing as black and white. It's either black or it's white. We could have a very thin line of white and a very thin line of black next to it, and we look at a picture that has both of them and they say, what color is it? It's not black and white. It's a color of black and it's a color of white in the same image. Now, if we want to mix them up like we're mixing up paint, then we're going to come up with a different identity. It's not going to be black-white. It's going to be gray. We have to make sure there's no gray in our view of man. There's no gray in our view of divine principle, because that would be an accident. This chapter on at-one-ment is only the second chapter. So number one, Mary Baker Eddy believes and was led to tell us that the first thing we've got to understand about the system of divine metaphysics is what is prayer all about. And so that's the first chapter. But then what is the second chapter? The very second chapter that she says is the second most important thing once you understand what prayer, Mary Baker Eddy says infinite progression is concrete being. So there is never a full understanding about anything because everything is infinite. We just maybe get a little touch more understanding today than we had yesterday. A tiny little touch. In fact, what is the quote, the introductory quote for chapter 14, which is a summary of the first 13 chapters? It's about precept and line and hear a little. Okay? Precept upon precept, line upon line, hear a little, there a little. It is one step at a time. That's the preface to the summary of the first 13 chapters. We need to take one step at a time. We don't need to try to think about, well, how are we going to get to the end of the race tomorrow? You know what happened to the race between the turtle and the hare? Hare being a rabbit. The rabbit ran real fast for a while and then had to sit down and rest. And while he was resting, the turtle walked right on by to the finish line, step by step, a little at a time. That is the way we need to progress, because it's infinite. Infinite progression is concrete being. Concrete, a symbol for something that is permanent. So the only thing that is permanent is if we make constant progress. Constant progress. Forever. No time limit. Infinite progression, she says. She doesn't say finite progression. Infinite. Infinite. At one moment. Remember, the second most important thing she says we should think about. The first one is, what is prayer? Are we going to demand something from God? Oh, God, help me. I got big problems here. My house is on fire. Or I'm going 120 50 miles an hour, and this person's got his brake lights on right in front of me. There's not time for me to stop. Because of my stupidity, I was following him one car length. I was right on his taillights. We have to know our business. What is our business? Our business is the system of divine metaphysics. God gives us the chalk. God gives us the chalkboard. Think of that as the tools. Think of the chalkboard as being the synonymous terms for God. And the chalk being the operator. What are we going to do? Are we going to add, subtract, multiply, or divide? Are we going to use the word Christ, Christianity, or science? And by the way, I didn't tell you what science was. Science has two faces on it. One is the lowest level, which is Christian science, which starts at depravity. It means the mortal view of anything. And what we have to do is we have to work up to the divine level of science, which is God. Look at page 115 and 116 in Science and Health. It's under the chapter of Science, Theology, and Medicine, and it's obviously in the section that is entitled Science. 115 and 116, those are the four levels of the system of divine metaphysics. Three of them are translation of mortal mind, and the other one is the translation of immortal mind. And it starts at the top. That's what we got to do. We got to go to the top. And we got to start there, and then we work down to the bottom to find out what the problem is, and then we've got to take it back up to the top. It's going up and down the ladder. The first time somebody that was really an experienced Christian Scientist, much more so than myself, said, we have to go up and down the ladder. I said, what in the world are you talking about? And that's exactly what this individual was talking about. I've learned so much from that individual. She is also involved in the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, much longer than myself. So, after we know how to pray, which of course is not a topic of this treatment, then we've got to make sure that we do a reality check about whether we are at one with God. Are we at one with the Christ consciousness? I've included this chapter about man because Jesus, as defined by Mary Baker Eddy, was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. He didn't have any miracles. People think he had all these miracles. They're not miracles. There is a scientific explanation for everything. You think these are acts of God when they have a big storm somewhere? Insurance companies try to get out of paying claims. They say this is an act of God. Yep. Very, very corrupt insurance industry. These are acts of God. No. An act of God is... God is never defined as evil. Never. Never. If you look at the derivation of the word, the real language that it was written in, you will find that the pure sense of God is not the root word that is being used. Whenever the Bible talks about God being evil, remember humans were involved in writing the Bible, and sometimes hundreds of years after what they wrote was said by the original person saying the word. If you want to learn about the Bible, on our website is a book, only 169 pages, called 10 Bible Lessons by Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He was a chemist, PhD in chemistry. And in 169 pages, and of course there's probably 10,000 pages of references that he uses, all from the Bible, except for the last two chapters, and that includes things from Mary Baker Eddy's writings. But for eight chapters, it is only references from the Bible. And I'm sure there's 10,000 pages of references, because he has one reference that would be like a whole chapter of one of the books of the Bible. I mean, how many pages are in the Bible? I don't know. It depends on the print size, right? But, you know, I would say probably it's not uncommon to have 1,000 pages in the Bible. And if you have a more reader size, like somebody at the desk, it's probably more than that. I don't know. But the point is that he has the references to back up everything he says, and his book is basically a summary of all the important things that happened in the Bible and all the important characters, every single one of them. It is the result of 30 years of research and studying that he did, that he wrote that book. And I looked for years and years and years to find a good book on the Bible, and I was unsuccessful in doing it. I bought a number of them, studied them. Some of them cost hundreds of dollars, you know, Bible study courses. Nothing compared to his. Nothing. He was a real pro. Another book that everyone should definitely use, and that is one by Frederick L. Rawson, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, and Life Understood. Well, he has many books, and Mr. Putnam has some other really valuable books also. One of them is Council of NECA, N-I-C-A-E-A. Very, very important book. I highly recommend it, because that is really the basis of the understanding that people have, which is false, about Jesus being God. And it that explains where it all came from. It came from a meeting of the governments and the churches in 325 A.D. Where do you think the Church of England came from? They're supposed to, in the U.S., there's supposed to be separation of church and state, which, of course, there is not. They even call one of the churches in England the Church of England. Anyway, think about, another book that everyone needs to be studying like a Bible, and that is Your Divinity Revealed by the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright. She has seven of her chapters in there are on the seven synonymous terms for God. You will not find another reference anywhere that better offers the information that you can learn from on what the seven synonymous terms mean. I mean, it is beyond price. It is a pearl of great wisdom. And she spent almost her entire adult life, and her last year was at the age of 100, according to the calendar. And this book was written just before she passed on. And she was sharp as a tack. You won't believe how beautiful that book is and how much one can learn from it. And she is such an entertaining writer. She has jokes sprinkled throughout the whole thing. And yet they are coupled with pearls of wisdom that is perfect. Perfect. Anyway, our whole website is full of jewels. Really jewels. Pearls of great price. Okay, that's bringing to a close. Whenever we do any work, we've got to seal it by saying something like this, and of course it needs to be in your own words. Everything should be your own. It should be internalized and individualized for your particular level of understanding and need. But this is one example of how to seal a treatment. Oh, by the way, I didn't say that the book that I referred you to, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer by Frederick L. Rawson, lists 1,315 ailments and their counterfact. And Mary Baker Eddy says that we have to find out what the problem is, and we have to know the counterfact in order to heal it. And he gives us an encyclopedia that has 1,315, probably everything that anyone has ever heard of or experienced or could read in any kind of a medical dictionary. It's covered there. And he gives you some very fine examples on how to pray. And like I say, he was the one that discovered retroactive healing. So I wanted to let you know about that. So here's one example of how to heal. I mean, how to seal a treatment. You could say something like, well, God is mind. Mind is all creative ability. Mind is also all capacity, all facility, all capability, all functionality. Mind is also the only action. And if you combine action with the creative ability and the other things mentioned, you're going to have performance. And with performance, you can measure it, and it's going to be power. Mary Baker Eddy says, the only power obtainable is the good we do and embody. What do you think she means by body? Certainly not the physical thing you see if you look in the mirror. Embody means within consciousness. That is where power comes from. Power comes from us knowing that the all capacity and capability and so forth comes from God, not from brain, not from exercising your arm or your mouth or whatever. So if we think about God being all of those things, then we've got to say, well, what good is that? Well, that protects the truth that is in this healing, in this treatment, I mean. The truth in this treatment is protected by all of these qualities of God. God is spirit, the only substance. So the spiritual nature of this treatment is protected. The life of this treatment is protected. The spiritual sense in this treatment is protected. It is protecting the truth. It is protecting life, truth, and love. This treatment is permeated with love because love is the wholeness. Love is the plan and design of everything. And the structure and system that is in this treatment protects the truth. Nothing can interfere. Nothing can dilute. Nothing can divest. Nothing can stop or reverse the power that is in this treatment. Because it is all sealed and protected by God. And there is no other power. There is no competition. There is no opposition to the one and only divine mind. Because it is the only power there is. It is omnipresent, which means it is within my consciousness and in the consciousness of any of those whom my thought rests upon. This treatment goes out into the universe of thought, where everyone can benefit from the truth that is in this treatment. It is permanent, without variation, no deviation, no mistakes, no error. It is truth. The knowing of God enables me to know this. The intelligence of God was reflected in this treatment. I know this to be true. God is all in all source and all manifestation. There is nothing but God. Amen.